Hi, I'm Allison Hare, a former corporate executive on a quest to help you and me create a little more space and freedom in our busy lives. Welcome to the Late Learner Podcast, where here we are breaking down old, tired paradigms. You know, the ones we were all taught to live in. But here we discover more modern approaches that just plain work better for you. So what are we late learning today? Well, what do you do when you look in the mirror and gravity has stricken your once very youthful, high and tight face? I'm not gonna lie, it is a biatch. It can really mess with you. And it is no secret that our society for centuries and centuries has put a premium value on youth as a moral imperative to beauty. And wherever you stand on plastic surgery, fillers, injections, it can also make a world of positive difference when done right and for the right reasons. So the question is, to cut or not to cut? And today, I got one of my favorite people ever on the podcast to unpack some of the beauty trends, understanding when it makes sense for surgery or less invasive options, and kind of demystifying the whole thing. It's a lot less stigmatized now, but there still is a lot of misinformation and kind of understanding what all of that means. So we are talking about what are some of the less effective trends that have really good marketing, and how to find the right surgeon for you, and just an overall really great, interesting social commentary. Today's guest is Dr. Louis DeJoseph. He is a triple board certified. Triple board. Who gets triple board certified? Triple board certified award-winning renowned facial plastic surgeon based out of Atlanta. He is a Castle Connolly rated top doctor. He was voted best rhinoplasty surgeon by Best Self. He was also voted the best facial plastic surgeon by Jezebel magazine and featured in the Atlanta magazine. That is only starting to scratch the surface of his accolades. He's amazing. But before we dig into our chat with Dr. DeJoseph, let's get to the good stuff. What is stuff? It is the surprisingly true, useful fun fact. And today's is a really fun one. There is a study that came out of London that claims that there are 20 top beauty tips that adults swear by to boost their mood. And topping the list for adults are haircuts, stylish outfits, and freshly washed hair. And broken down by gender, men felt more attractive after a haircut and after a bath. Women are bathing themselves. Women felt their best after wearing their favorite outfit or washing their hair. I concur. I mean, I get that dopamine hit when I am rocking a new outfit that fits my changing perimenopause body and just right, and always when I get my hair blown out. If you want the full list of 20 top beauty tips, click on the link in the show notes. Maybe use it as an affirmation to boost your mood. Why not? Now let's talk to Dr. Louis DeJoseph. Finally, we are here with Dr. Louis DeJoseph, triple board certified. Triple? Who does that?
I don't know.
Dr. DeJoseph, I'm so glad to have you. Finally, welcome, welcome.
Allison, thank you for having me. It's truly a pleasure. We've talked about this for quite some time.
I know.
And here we are.
It's hard to fit in your schedule, too. It's funny because anytime Dr. DeJoseph is on my calendar, the world is like everything else needs to move because this appointment cannot.
I love
it. I'm glad to be here with you. So Dr. DeJoseph, you've been practicing for what, 20 years?
Yeah, it's been since almost, 2003. So yeah, we're in 20 years of practice.
Why facial? Why? Because you're not full body. You're not everything. You're just specializing in facial plastic surgery.
You know, facial stuff is, you know, as I always say, facial surgery and facial plastic surgery in general is not a hobby. Meaning, for instance, we are both sitting here having this conversation. You could have had a tummy tuck and liposuction 5 days ago, 6 days, a week ago. I wouldn't know. Everybody has clothes on. Your face, you can't put a shirt on. So it's measure three times, cut once, that type of thing. Because something's wrong with your face post-surgically. It's debilitating. How do you go outside? And your smile's crooked. Your one eye's dead. I mean, so it really is a specialty that has to be very accurate and exacting to make sure that, you know, because your face is who you identify. And everyone identifies you as. So it's a little different level of gravity from a surgical standpoint.
Do we have to talk about gravity so quickly?
It always comes into play.
Yeah, it sure does. So I wonder why facial plastics, though? Like when you were going through med school and, mm-hmm. and all of that, I know you were born into a a family of doctors.
Yes, yes. My father was a cardiologist. My mother was a nurse. So it was
Is he disappointed?
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, when you talk about medical specialties, the internal medicine guys, which are sort of like the cardiologists and those that they're the intellectuals, you know, and then they see the surgeons as like the cretins, you know, we just cut mm-hmm. stuff out. But it's always been like that through the history of medicine, that there's always that little divide between medicine and surgery. But in the end, we always work together. No, I was always a tinkerer growing up. You know, I built my first like radio control airplane when I was about 8 years old, like just weird, like the kid in the basement, like, what's he doing down there? And I was building planes. I was always like the guy tinkering stuff. So it was a natural progression when I got into medical school, and I remember being exposed to the facial anatomy. So the anatomy from your clavicles, your collarbones, up. There is more stuff from there to the top of your head than there is from your neck to the rest of your body. There's so much anatomy up here. It's so complex and compact. So I was like, wow, this is amazing up here. Just the littlest things, how your eyes move, and it's really an interesting design, and it captured me, you know, in gross anatomy. Like, I like this stuff. And then I went into head and neck surgery, which is ear, nose, and throat, basically. And from there, you go into fellowship and do facial plastics, because I always love the restorative part of ENT. You know, we'd cut a cancer out, and you have to reconstruct the person, make them so they can see their face again after you take the cancer out. And that was the part I really enjoyed, and it sort of snowballed from there into where I am now, doing just strictly facial plastic surgery.
What I think is interesting about your approach is that I come in here, you have not cut me yet. It will come. It will come. But I'll say, Dr. DeJoseph, my face is falling. And you're like, no, we're not touching it yet. And so you tend to take a more natural approach. I'm interested to hear about the trends of what people are looking for. How does the beauty industry and the trends kind of influence what happens in your rooms here?
You know, it's a very, that's a great question. And there's so many different factors to go into. The first thing I'll talk into like is we are in facial plastic surgery. If you really think about it, nobody needs what we do. I always say this, we're a luxury product.
Yeah.
You know, we're like some expensive shirt, Neiman Marcus. I mean, what does it make? You know, just a shirt. But so it's an interesting industry from that standpoint. But, you know, people, the patients who come to us, you know, they feel good about it. They take good care of themselves. You keep yourself in shape. That's, your face does not follow suit. In fact, as we age and you keep yourself in shape, your face looks worse. You'd rather be a little heavy or something or not, and your face will look younger. It's an interesting phenomenon. So trends that we see is, back, I'd say 10 to 15 years ago, the entire industry is pushing to non-invasive, non-surgical. And that's where the fillers were born. So the first ones that came into FDA approval were in the early 2000s. I think Restylane was the first one to market, maybe 2005 or 6. And before that, it was all just surgery, pull. So the fillers came into the market and like revolutionized a lot of things. We learned a lot that, wow, volume is important to the face. That's why you'd see people in the 90s who look windswept, because there was no thought process to putting something back. It was just, well, let's pull it tighter and that should look good. So that was a nice revolution in that standpoint of learning that volume is an important part to facial rejuvenation. Then there was this whole push after that as far as how can we do a lot of things without surgery? Great. Anytime you don't have to do surgery and get to point B where you need to be, wonderful. Why not? So all these wonderful machines have come out, and they still have a place in what we do, meaning like non-surgical fat reductions and things, that, without naming names of particular machines. And they can do certain things as long as your expectations are tempered with them. They're not going to give you a surgical result. The latest trend that I've seen is that I see younger women coming in who, let's say, younger in their 40s, coming in for facelifts. And I asked them, I said, well, you know, what have you done before? They're like, well, I spent thousands of dollars on this old ultrasound treatment. I spent thousands of dollars on this thing that freezes fat. It didn't do anything. And they're tired of it. They're fatigued of it. So here they are coming in their early 40s, and they know I'm a facelift guy, and they come in for a facelift. And honestly, they're some of the happiest patients I have. They're like, that's exactly what I was looking for. And wow, it's a week, and I'm going out to dinner. So we're seeing that trend. There's a move towards surgery again. It's been destigmatized, and they're just tired of spending a lot of money on things that really don't do much.
Well, how much do you think is marketing? You hear, and this may be stuff you offer, like old therapy. I'm just trying to think mm-hmm. of things that I've heard, like the freezing fat, the cryo stuff. I don't know that it works. And maybe it works for some people, but I think the marketing is really twisting our minds and pushing us one way or the other. But it's also draining our bank accounts sure. with not as much lift as you would like.
Yeah. I mean, you just hit on it. It's the machines like CoolSculpting, Old Therapy. There's nothing wrong with them. And yeah. as long as your expectations are very reasonable, what they can do without a scalpel or a recovery per se. Okay, great. And it's one of these things you can look at the pictures and you're kind of like, yeah, all right, maybe that one's better. The after. The problem is those treatments are not inexpensive. So they end up mm-hmm. being $3,000 to $5,000 for a series of them. And the results are like, maybe it's better. Mm-hmm. And you're finding a whole generation of people who are like enamored with these because the marketing is so sexy and mm-hmm. So compelling. And then all of a sudden they're like, I just spent $6,800 on this. I really don't see any difference. Well, you're almost at a facelift territory. And then you see like that's real. You know, that's a real mm-hmm. result, real things, lasting results. So we're seeing that trend coming around. So younger women who are fatigued by those things coming in for have more of a surgical procedure, and it's an interesting thing.
So you've been doing this for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'd be so interested to hear about how your practice has followed some of the trends.
Sure.
Like I said before we were recording, Real Housewives don't come to you. You're not that guy. There are other surgeons that may be able to help. You're more on the natural side. But what have you noticed that certainly the pandemic or even social media has really deeply impacted not only our mental states, but also our physical sure. states before trying to figure out how do I keep up to this almost impossible beauty standard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, the first, I'll answer that in a couple of different parts. I mean, one of the things is there is a regionality to it, meaning the bookends, you know, East Coast and West Coast. Mm. A lot of patients who are seen in the big cities, you know, LA, New York, they will shout it from the rooftops. You know, they'll go out with like a nasal dressing on after rhinoplasty and go shopping like, oh yeah, who did your nose? Oh, this and this, I had it 2 days ago. The South is a little bit different. South is a little more like, you know, I want my friends to look at me in dinner and go, did you change your hair? Did you get new makeup? Did you lose some weight? Like, right. That's what they're looking for. Then after 2-3 glasses of wine, they might admit that, oh, by the way, I had a facelift, you know, with so-and-so or Dr. Joseph. So a little different style, a little more under the radar in the South. And I kind of like that. It plays to my style. When I do surgery, I always say a couple of things. You should always look like part of your family. You're not trying to be something you never were, and that's not my style. So I always want you to look good. Your friends, your family who know you will give you that little head tilt and go, what are you doing? You look great. And that's, for me, is a victory. The best surgery are the ones that go unnoticed, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. If you notice them, they're almost for the wrong reason. So that's my take on that. But the pandemic was an interesting thing. So everything stopped. We're cosmetic surgery. We weren't considered an essential mm-hmm. in any way. We still did some laceration repairs in the office. Like I told people, like, hey, listen, if you fall or your kid gets, you know, y'all playing, we're happy to help with that kind of stuff. We're not doing any elective things. Then once sort of the gates were back open, that was the busiest years in the history of plastic surgery, because everybody was sitting around doing nothing and you couldn't do anything. Once the gates open, you can't travel to Italy. You can't go on a cruise. What do you do? Hey, so I have time. I'm going to get my face done. So it was crazy town for a while there because of that. And it was fun. And now we're seeing a little more normalization. You know, there's some seasonality to plastic surgery, meaning in the summer, facial stuff usually calms down a little bit. So does all surgery because, oh, the kids are out of school. We're going on a Disney cruise. Oh, we're going to Europe on a cruise. So the world is open now again. And we're seeing a little bit more of the normal seasonality come into plastic surgery, which is not the worst thing. So,
but I think what was so funny, I literally think I was one of your first customers that was here for my injections. It was like May 1st or something, you know, and I happen to have it on the calendar whenever you open. And, you know, we're all in here with masks and we're like, I don't know if we should be here. What was interesting is that you had shared that because people were staring at themselves all day long on Zoom in bad lighting, and they're like, oh my God, fix this.
Yeah.
What happened?
Hey, it's Allison. Thanks for listening. Did you know that the ideas shared in this episode are something I can help you implement in your own life? You can accelerate the outcomes you truly desire when you have someone pulling up a chair right next to you and saying, let's do this together. Let's put a strategy and a framework and an execution plan together and let's get it done. Schedule a free exploratory call with me at allisonhair.com/schedule.
Yeah, we saw, I mean, one of the trends we saw was a thing called, and it's in the plastic surgery literature, called the Zoom boom, where you had people who never really, like, I'll give you an example. Like, you know, we had some businessmen come in, you know, probably in their 60s, you know, just kind of stalwart guys come in who, like, in all honesty, probably didn't even know they had a face. Like, these are guys like, what's wrong with my face? You know, so all of a sudden they're on Zoom with all their like young team. And they're like, who's the one guy said this to me. He goes, who's the old? Like, I looked at him like, who's that over there? And he's like, oh, my God, that's me. That's what I look like to all these fresh faced, like young associates. Is that guy? He comes in and I remember distinctly, he goes to me, fix this neck. I don't care what you got to do. Just make this go away because I can't look like that on Zoom. So there's an example of a guy who's never even thought about this stuff and came in at something, was extremely happy with it. So that was an interesting trend. But everything went up across the board because everybody was just kind of cabin fever and I couldn't do anything else. It was like, I have the time. I'm going to have surgery and get this done and emerge like a butterfly on the back end of this this pandemic. So it was a fun time.
So I think what I've been reading about is the great deflation, where people are dissolving their fillers, they're dissolving their lips. And there is a trend that I've seen. Black China did it on, I don't know if you saw it, but it was on Instagram, where she was like, just get this out of my face. I don't look like myself. Do you think it is just a trend that it will go back up? Or do you think it had kind of reached its peak of just, who is it? Kylie Jenner versus, I don't know, one of them is like skinny and gaunt and the other one is like plump. And this is happening now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where it's kind of going back to that waif kind of face of just that gaunt kind of drawn look, where people are taking out bones and doing all kinds of stuff. What are you seeing now?
You know, the fillers are an interesting phenomenon. They came out initially as collagen in the early, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And that was just for like a little tiny wrinkle on the face, like a little thing on your lip. You'd fill it. And the old joke in plastic surgery was collagen. It didn't last. It was like by the time the patient's in the parking lot, it's gone.
Whoops.
Whatever. I mean, that was the truth of it. It didn't last. So then these newer ones, the hyaluronic acids, came out. Restylane was the first one to market. And wow, we used them for things like, oh, your laugh lines or your little lines at the corners of your mouth. And then it sort of took off from there. Wait a second, we can do, you know, jawline, cheeks, and temples, and under the brow. And it became more three-dimensional filling. And with that came other problems with complication rates of different things, such as intravascular injections and things like that, that people don't really think about. And I remember giving a lecture to about 100 different physicians, nurse injectors and things. This was in the early 2000s. And I talked to him, and there's a certain substance everyone who injects should have in their office. It's a dissolvent to get rid of them. God forbid you get it in a vessel or something like that. And I said, how many people have, you know, this stuff in their office? There's 100 people in the room. Two raised their hand. I'm like, oh my God, everybody in here should have that. So it was really this wild west for a while. And then there became a thought process that, wait a second, if we fill the cheeks enough, I never believed in this, so I'm still waiting for someone to show it to me, but it's been out there and it's been taught by several companies that fill the cheeks, pulls up the jawline, you don't need a facelift. Therein lies the problem of what you were talking about.
That's why people look so disfigured almost.
They look bananas.
Yeah.
And you have so many different levels of aesthetic eye and training injecting now. And there's good and bad at all levels, not only from the plastic surgery levels, there's very good injectors and like not so good. Same thing as you trickle down into the nurse injectors, some that are incredibly good with good aesthetic eyes. And there's others that's just like, oh, let's just keep putting more in there. We're going to lift your jawline. it's really not going to happen. So what's happening is they're getting overfilled. Everything is, you have the syringe in your hand like a hammer and everything looks like a nail. And what I tell patients is this, and I've heard this for years. Hey, Dr. DeJoseph, I want to have fillers so I don't have to have surgery. And then I hear the other camp. Hey, I want to have surgery so I don't need to have fillers.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, wait a second. That's a bad...
Where's the right balance?
So they dovetail into each other. A little bit of peanut butter and chocolate. So the easy way to think about it is that surgery is two-dimensional. It lifts the face, brings things up, doesn't round it out. So you need a little bit in the cheeks, a little bit in areas. So they do complement each other a little bit. So when you try to do completely one thing, like I'm going to put fillers in the cheeks and it's going to lift your jawline up. No, it's not. And we're seeing that finally going away. Like, because they realize this is not a normal look. Their eyes look small. And
is it permanent? You know, are there permanent implications to too much fillers?
You know, there's nothing really permanent about them, meaning the newer ones, the main ones that are used are hyaluronic acids. They're completely dissolvable, but your body will grow some collagen around them. The process of dissolving them can leave some short-term issues in your skin with irregularities in the contour and things like that, that you kind of can chase, you know, going back and forth a little bit. So you'd rather try to be conservative and judicious on the front end than just put too much and then try to repair it on the back. That's my two cents on that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important because it's easy to go to nurse injectors and there are places that you just, I personally had something where I had like a little divot or something I wanted to fill in my cheek.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a place, it was like some cheapy place where it was maybe a med spa that some guy was going to be there and was going to do injections. It was like, sweet, a deal on Botox and injections. And so I asked him to fill it. And just like you said, like every hammer is a nail. What is it?
Right. Yeah. And when you have a hammer in your hand, everything looks like a nail.
Everything looks like a nail. He's like, well, you never want to get any of this to waste. So he started injecting it all over my face and it moved out the Restylane that was under my eyes. So I had these puffy eyes.
Sure.
And I came back to you and said, Dr. DeJoseph, can you help? And you said, yes. And so you dissolved it in a way and I'm afraid to go anywhere else. Not that I want to go anywhere else.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like I'm so cautious that I don't want anybody touching or injecting my face because of your meticulousness in that. And so it's hard to find the right people.
Yeah. I mean, the short answer to that is yes. I mean, you got to find someone with at least enough skill set and training and the aesthetic eye that you have.
But how do you know that?
Hard to know.
Because there's a lot of marketing. Is there any help? Like sometimes the reviews aren't as complete. Or
I mean, as we know, reviews with anything else, like you look at them at a restaurant and it's like, wow, we're just there. It was great. Reviews are so manipulated nowadays. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much water they hold, but you try to find someone that has the same personality as you when you want to listen to what they say, as far as like, oh, that's the same idea as I have. Not like, hey, let's put 14 syringes of filler in your face.
Mm-hmm.
No. The easy way to think about fillers is you can always add more. Mm-hmm. It's harder to take them out. So you want to always be a little conservative in the face. And that's always been at least my take on it. Also, you know, you ask people who somebody's been to. Like, hey, you look great. You know, who's doing that for you? The way I like to describe it, it's like a hairdresser effect. You know, you find somebody who knows how to cut your bangs right, you'll travel 800 miles to come back to them and get it right. True. Am I right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of that. I have patients. I'm like, listen, you moved to Dallas. I have a lot of good colleagues. They're like, nope. I'm flying to Atlanta for 10 minutes for filler. I'm like, okay. So I get that. You know, you get comfortable because it's your face. And once I've had like a patient a few times, like I know the face, I know how to cut your bangs, you know, another way to do it. I know how you like them. So that's a nice thing when you have repeat clients, it makes it very easy to continue them on the track that they want.
You have people that come here and they're looking for a natural look. They're looking to look refreshed. And I'd be so interested to hear from your perspective of when that turns into obsession. Like, how do you coach somebody who is telling you, I need you to fix this. I need you to fix this. And you're saying, you don't need all that. You're going to look, you're not going to like how you look. They say it's great for self-esteem. But when does that self-esteem turn into obsession?
Yeah. I mean, you hit on a very tough issue for people in our industry, you know, as plastic surgeons and any kind of aesthetic practitioners. You got to be able to say no at some point. Now, sometimes the patient will listen to you and they trust you. Like, you don't need that. Anecdotally, I remember a young woman, this is years ago, 28 years old, wanted a facelift. So I came in, I was very nice with her. I said, listen, you got to, you know, I examined her, gave her my time, and I said, you really don't need this. I was trying to help her because obviously there was something a little more between the ears than what she was seeing. And, you know, there's things called body dysmorphic syndrome and things of that nature that we as aesthetic professionals have to be aware of. You know, they estimate 25-30% of people walk into plastic surgeons' offices, body dysmorphic syndrome. It could be the smallest mole on their chest. To them, it's a nightmare. To us, it's like, where is it? So again, back to this girl, she was 28. She goes, I need a facelift. Look, I can pull the skin away from my jawline. She had a beautiful face, beautiful. And who knows what's going on in her life. So I try to just counsel, like, listen, I think you look great. And I do this all day. If I thought you need a facelift, I'd be happy to do it for you. But you have a face that's enviable. There's patients who walk in who would love to have exactly what you have. I'm here for you. Come back and see me anytime. We'll talk more about it. Trying to do the right thing. And she came back to me maybe 4 months later with Botox. I just happened to glance and she had incisions around her ears. She found somebody to do it for her. I mean, again, it's things we can't control. And as a physician, you got to be able to say no. So she went to somebody who wasn't able to say no. Like, sure, I'll do it on a 28-year-old. We do run into those issues, but it's a matter of treating everybody like your family. Like, what would you want if your mother or your sister went to see someone? You'd want to have them treated the same way. So it's a very simple way to go about making decisions on patients.
Well, I love that not only are you an incredible surgeon, but you're so fun. You always make me laugh. You're a great communicator too, which helps, and is not all plastic surgeons have that.
I'm definitely a frustrated comedian trapped in a surgeon's body. Right. That is very true.
Yeah. So I wonder, you know, this podcast is called Late Learner. Yeah. What is something you've recently learned that you were wrong about?
I was thinking, I thought maybe like a specific skill or something like I've taken up golf. You think like, oh, doctors, everybody golfs, you know, nothing. I've never golfed in my life. And my daughter has picked up golf. So I'm going to take my first lesson this weekend. But things that I've learned in our industry is there's so many things, but it's listen to the patient. And I have a fellowship here. We have the only one in the state of Georgia.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't realize
that. We have the only facial plastics fellowship. We train, you know, we got this year, we have 30 applications for one spot. And the resumes on these fellow applicants are like, as if you sat down with a glass of wine and a pencil and paper and made them up. Like, it's like, are you kidding me? Is that for real?
Right.
So really the brilliance of the brilliance. So I bring them here and they, you know, they become our fellows. So one of the things I tell them is anytime when I see a consultation for a new patient, this is what I've just learned over the years, listen to them. You know, you can look at a patient and say, well, they'd be good for a brow lift. You need your cheek aug and these, you know, face lift, neck lift. It's not for them. See what they think about their face. So put them in front of the mirror and listen to them and really see what they, it's their face, not yours. You're there to get them where they want to be. When you're learning initially, it's all what the book says. This angle has to be 30 degrees and cheek should be the widest point of a feminine face and the brow should peak over this part of the eye. Yeah, that's all standardized stuff. But there's no two faces are the same. Listen to the patient and see what they see what they're what's bothering them. And that's one of the greatest things I've learned at my stage. I'm like, I just listen. What's bothering you? You know, that type of thing. If they don't, if their brows don't bother them, leave them alone. That's the family brow, you know?
The family brow. Is this the difference? Because I know before we were recording, you were talking about younger plastic surgeons do things a little bit differently than people that are a little more seasoned. What are you saying?
That comes from a marketing standpoint. So when I started, the only way you would market is it was all word of mouth and going to talk to other doctors like, hey, I'm in town. I'm a new facial plastics guy. I can do a lot of fun things and send people to me. Now they have, you know, you had your website. Web was even new back then. And now you have all the social media. So Instagram basically is the biggest animal in that. I've noticed this trend of what's called on-the-table results. So it's a specific, you'll see it with facelifting, especially with rhinoplasty. So traditionally, when you would show any sort of marketing material, it was a minimum of a six-month result. Like, let the body heal, see what it does, and then, hey, that's a great result. That's a durable result, and that's going to stay like that. 6 months old, pretty much going to be there. That's a great picture. You could show that at a meeting in front of other doctors. Now, they're taking pictures of patients on the operating table.
How do you feel about that?
Well, the old adage goes, it better look good on the table. It better look great. You know, especially with rhinoplasty, we do a rhinoplasty, and rhinoplasties are one of the toughest things we do, where long-term healing changes over time. So they're taking these pictures and marking, like, look at how amazing my results are on the table. What they're not showing you is 8 months down the road, when that nose is making an off-ramp on Interstate 85 to the left, you don't see that because the cartilage is memory, or it warped, mm-hmm. or a suture. I mean, there's so many factors that go into that. So they get all these results pictures that are not real because they're not durable results. You're not seeing, we all know that in surgery, like, yeah, I mean, looks great on the table, but mm-hmm. what about in a year when the tissues contract and everything? Mm-hmm. So that's been an interesting trend for me that we've all talked to guys in my particular era, like, yeah, can you believe it? I'm like, yeah, but now it's become accepted. Mm-hmm. As a marketing, so everybody sort of does it, which is amazing to me. It's not a real result. Other trickery we see is flash, no flash. Just take a picture of yourself with no flash under your bathroom lights.
Yeah.
Then flick the ring light on and take the picture. And it's like, voila, glorious. and we see that all the time, before and after pictures. Like, look at this amazing result from this procedure. It's like, just put the flash on in the second picture. It looks perfect. It filled all the creases. We're very attuned to that. But, you know, the general public isn't. So there's a lot of that. And it's frustrating when you see it. But you got to at least kind of always look at everything with a little tilted head and make sure it's right for you. And it's don't do anything too dangerous until you really understand what it is.
What a perfect way to close out. Dr. DeJoseph, how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, gosh. Easy
or
way,
learn more.
Yeah, learn more. I mean, we're on the web. It's our website is, premierimage.com. We're here in Sandy Springs.
Georgia.
It's Sandy Springs, Georgia. Come in and see us. That's the easiest way to get a hold of us.
Well, Dr. DeJoseph, I think you hung the moon. Thank you so much for doing this.
This was truly wonderful. We got to do this again soon.
Yes.
And
okay.
I'll work on my jokes. So we'll have some comedy.
Yeah. Please do that.
Thank you.
Bye. Big thanks to the wonderful Dr. Louis DeJoseph. I know you had a great time listening as I did. If you're in Atlanta or you want to travel to get the absolute best work done on your face, I have linked his info in the show notes. I always love talking to him. And as for you, if you are looking for more one-on-one support as you might be considering a lifestyle change, meaning that you might be running too hard and too fast and don't know how to get out of this hamster wheel, let's talk. I'm offering a free breakthrough strategy call at allisonhair.com/schedule. There is no obligation at all. I just truly want to help. And if I can be of service after that, we can talk about what that looks like, but would love to talk to you and see what's going on and how I can help. As always, I've linked everything in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening and sharing this podcast and these ideas you learn with your friends. That's how you start a movement and change a culture. Until next episode, I'll see you on the socials.